It's time for the Big Three, brought to you by the Metal Store. Discover why the Metal Store has become the name to know for premier manufacturer of quality metal roofing. The Metal Store is your one-stop shop for all your metal roofing and metal building.
Hard across the logo. Finds Tucker wide open, left-hand corner, 4-3. Yes! Timeout Golden State! 8 straight for Houston. 19-point game. And a new playoff career high, 22 for P.J. Tucker.
Yes!
P.J. Tucker
Pipe
gets...
and smoke it, Marcus.
P.J. Tucker gets 22 points, and the Rockets are a live underdog in this series. Congratulations, Missile. Nice win for the Rockets. Now we have a series to pay attention to.
It was. I told you guys they were going to win yesterday.
They played well.
They did play good.
Not so much.
Well, if you remember, I think we both said that Houston was going to win this series in seven, right, before it started. So
we did.
The dream is alive, my friend. The dream is alive. And, man, listen, James Harden wasn't nearly as good. I thought Chris Paul, even though his numbers weren't great, I thought he did some really nice things on the floor. But it was three guys with a difference last night. Trevor Ariza, his defense, distributing the basketball, scoring the ball, he was great. P.J. Tucker, as we just heard, was fantastic, a playoff high. And this is a real key for the rest of the playoffs, Missile, because he hasn't been good, is Eric Gordon knocking down those three balls. He was fantastic last night with 27 points off the bench. If they get anywhere near that kind of productivity out of those three guys, Houston's going to be tough even for the almighty Warriors to deal with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, They will be. You guys, I'm not going to launch into the Steph Curry really isn't right narrative, because we haven't been talking about that until today, or some people haven't. But do you think that he's going to continue the rest of this series shooting the basketball like he has? 2-for-13, I believe, from 3-point line. That's as bad of a 2-game stretch as Steph Curry's had in important games ever.
He's gonna start shooting better. I mean, Golden State, they shot 30% from three. Last night, I mean, that's probably not going to happen again in this series. I wouldn't bank on that. And I think Curry will start making some shots. It's all about, it happens. Shooters go through rough stretches sometimes. That's what's going on with Curry right now.
Yeah, he has not shot the ball well. And I tell you, I talked about this a little bit last hour. I give the Rockets a lot of credit, because they have found a weakness in Steph Curry defensively, and they are exposing that baby. So, I mean, I think part of this isn't part of it them continually not allowing him to rest on the defensive end? I mean, that could be part of the reason he's been so poor shooting the basketball.
No question about it. You're exactly right. I mean, they are killing him when they have the ball, and they are wearing him out. So that's a very good strategy that they've had, and he's having a hard time staying on the court defensively.
Kevin Durant's not having a hard time, and it just made me think last night. And I know how good Golden State was before Durant got there, but, man, if Kevin Durant's not playing for Golden State last night, where's the points coming from?
I don't know, but that's a matchup that Golden State is exploiting to their advantage, too.
They are.
It's just difficult. The Rockets aren't double-teaming Kevin Durant, and there's nobody that they have that's equipped to guard him. And crazy as this sounds, is that dude went for 38 points, Dusty, on 13 of 22 shooting from the field, and was a minus 28 in the plus minus.
Wow.
He had the had the worst plus minus in the game.
That game wasn't even close. So that was a blowout last night, fellas. Missile, I mean, that was a blowout. Your Rockets got up by as many as 29, and I think they led by double digits the final, was it 28 minutes of the game? And that was a butt whooping for the defending champs.
Yeah, it was a bigger blowout than game one was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Rockets just dominated. They made all their shots. That's tough. They're tough to beat when they do that, even for Golden State.
6 assists for the Draymond Green. One thing I would do if I were Golden State, and Golden State won a championship without Kevin Durant on their roster, they've got to get more than 4 3-point shots for Klay Thompson. I mean, as good as Steph Curry is, Klay Thompson is one of the best shooters ever in the history of the game from behind the three-point line. And you almost have to treat him as, at times, where's Clay? Let's get him a look. Because he's too good to have the type of performance that he had last night. Only 4 3-point field goal attempts in 37 minutes. Some of that's due to the Rockets' defense, switching things. But they've got to get – Steve Kerr's got to find a way to get him some shots, I think. Now, I think going back home, the Warriors are going to have – know, they're such a highly efficient offensive team. Playing in that gym with the crowd behind them, there's a pretty good chance, I think, that they just get going. They get into transition. They get some easy baskets. But if it comes down to crunch time in a game, I'd want to see Clay get some shots.
Hey, one guy I don't want to see get shots anymore for what's become my Houston Rockets now, Missile. See how I did that?
Yeah, I heard it.
Luke Mbamute can keep his butt on the bench, Missile. He's been so bad in this series. He's been so bad. Missing layups.
They took him out of the game after he had the display of the back-to-back missed layups.
Man. Yeah, he didn't get many minutes. I think his shoulder's still bothering him. He said he was too scared to dunk because he separated his shoulder twice this season on dunks, and I just don't think he's 100% healthy.
As somebody that's gone through that a lot in my career, I can tell you that it is a terrible, terrible situation to deal with. So I feel for him. I hope his shoulder gets better and he gets back out there soon, because there's no pain like a shoulder separated from dunking. Also, another good move that D'Antoni made. Yeah?
Yeah, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, Nene. I texted you the other night, Dusty. I said that Tariq Black should play and Tariq Black should play instead of Nene. I mean, it was some, you know, it was garbage time, but for the most part, they did put Nene out there, which is a good move, I thought.
So, you know, there was so much of the Rockets can't win playing isolation basketball. They're going to have to do something different, you know, ball movement versus isolation. And what are the Rockets? Everyone criticized Mike D'Antoni after game one. He's like, we're not going to change what we do. We're just going to do it better. And Missile, I mean, and I want to hear some clips here, but to me, that's what I saw. They didn't change a whole lot. The ball was moving a little bit more. But to me, they were more aggressive defensively. They played with better energy and more effort, both on the boards and on the defensive end. They got turnovers, which led to some runouts, and they just got the energy going. But to me, it wasn't any type of wholesale changes. It was just the Rockets digging in, and Chris Paul kind of spoke about that afterwards.
Surprisingly, we didn't change anything. You know, we guarded the same way. I mean, obviously, we played harder, but scheme-wise, we didn't change anything. We just did everything a little harder, as we talked about yesterday, and we talked about game one. Got out to the shooters. Our switches were a lot cleaner. I think game one, Clay got off, 15 threes? He only got off four tonight, so that's a little better.
Agrees with me on that. I'm sorry. I know that, Dusty, you have now adopted the Rockets as your team. The Missile is fired up about the Rockets' chances. But the stat that I keep looking at that I know that I don't think I'm going to see again in this series is the combined shooting of Gordon, Ariza, and Tucker. Ariza and P.J. Tucker were 15 of 18 in that game. So if you throw in Eric Gordon, that's 23 of 33 for those three players. If those guys shoot anything like that for the rest of the series, then you're looking at the world champion Houston Rockets. But I don't think that it's going to happen. That group wasn't very good other than Gordon in game one. They were superb in game two. But I don't think we're going to see those guys have those kind of shooting statistics in the rest of the series. To me, that's an outlier. That's why when you play a seven-game series, these things tend to even out and balance themselves out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't expect Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker to combine for 15 of 18, but, you know, what if they combine for 10 of 18, right? And James Harden isn't 9 of 24. So I'm just saying, so long as they get something out of those guys, and now they've at least got a little bit of confidence having done it, I'm with you. They're not going to – 22, and 27 isn't coming from that three players probably anymore in this series. But so long as
Here's one thing, though, before we move on.
Those guys, Mark, I do think that's a huge key. You don't have to get that much every night. That was a blowout. They can win games without getting much from those three guys.
The difference in the Rockets in game one and game two and the Cavs in game two with what happened with LeBron is you would much rather have the situation that you had last night than the situation you had in game one, where Harden is making all the shots and taking all the shots because guys stand around. The Cavs did it in game two. The Rockets did it in game one. Whereas when you spread the wealth a little bit, Harden still chunked it. He had 15 threes in the game. But those other guys made shots, and yet that meant they were more invested in the defensive end of things. I mean, when you're not getting the ball, Royce talks about it. We have should be one of the Monsters of the Midday official phrases. The ball has energy. And when you get to shoot, when you get to make baskets, you're going to play harder on the defensive end of the floor. So the Rockets – the Rockets' recipe for success is to spread the ball around, and you're going to have to live and die with guys like Ariza, Tucker, and Gordon taking shots. They're pretty good shooters. They're not as good as what Golden State has, but if they have games like this, then the Rockets are going to win, and they're going to win because these guys are going to invest in the defensive end of the floor too also. So I think that's a much better formula for the Rockets, what we saw in Game 2, than what we've seen in Game 1 of the series.
You know who I want to hear from? I want to hear from Kevin Durant, because typically Kevin Durant, it's always something great. On a night where his team struggled, I think Oklahoma City should get to hear from KD talking about their poor start.
I started the game off with a turnover. I can't have that and a foul, so I got Trevor Ariza going and their crowd going, so I take full responsibility for the start of the game. And after that, it's just contagious. You know, my teammates kind of follow my lead, so I can't start the game off like that.
I thought the TNT crew did a really good job, and I noticed that too. Those early turnovers, it led to energy in the building. It led to energy on that basketball team. Kevin Durant, big of him, I guess, to take the blame last night, because he was really the only Warrior that showed up to play. But I did think those early turnovers, that kind of set the stage for this Rocket team to launch, Marcus.
Nice. That was beautiful. How about Steph Curry? We talked about his the fact that the Rockets are going at him. They're making him work on the defensive end of the floor.
For the most part, it's just a frustrating night all the way around. They made some adjustments, got other guys involved, and they made plays. And that's kind of how a series like this is going to be. Game after game, it's going to be a chess match. And tonight, we just didn't make enough plays to stop the momentum in this building. And that was the difference in the game. You know, P.J. Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, they stepped up tonight. So got to be ready for that kind of aggressiveness from them in game 3.
At the very least, Marcus, right. At the very least, we've got a series. Not Houston, we have a series now, Mark. So, I mean, that's good. You're happy about that. I know you're a Warriors fan now. You got your KD jersey that you wear at the house when you're watching your team's games. But you've got to at least be, as an NBA fan, excited that it appears that we've got the makes of a pretty nice series in front of us.
Someone has answered with a win in this series. I want to know what Steve Kerr thinks. Steph Curry's injury situation is responsible for his poor play.
How much is his injury responsible for his performance tonight? Curry's. How much is Curry's lingering injury maybe responsible?
His lingering injury, how much is it responsible for?
For some of his play tonight.
13.7%.
But you know what? That's such a weak question. I mean, I'm telling you, man. What is that, a Warriors fanboy? What, are we going to make excuses now because Steph Curry hasn't played well, hasn't shot the ball well, that they're exposing how bad he is defensively through these first two games? So we're going to make excuses now? I remember reading articles last series against New Orleans talking about, well, no problems with Steph. First game back, he lights it up. But now all of a sudden he's got a lingering injury. My God.
Same injury concern after game one when he played poorly.
Terrible question.
People are talking about it. I agree. It is.
Well, people are trying to create a false narrative because
correct.
This guy.
They didn't talk about his injury after game one. They won. Right. No, they won game one. They didn't talk about his injury after game one.
They went at him in game one. Didn't play well. Just as much as they went at him in game two, didn't they, Missile?
Yeah.
I mean, he was getting to the basket last night. I saw him get to the basket several times past Capella. Anyway.
That's a good
Steph
thing.
Curry
about
just hasn't played well.
Curry
just hasn't played well in this series. That's okay. Just say that. Ask a question. What does Steph have to do to get better? Or even you could ask the question: is there a lingering knee injury? Not well. Clearly, there's a lingering knee injury. What percentage do you think that has led to Steph's poor play? Give me a break.
That was very fanboyish. All right, we have a lot coming up on the show today. Tim McMahon is going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour. Dusty has told me that he would like to take phone calls. 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS, 460-9957. If you would like to talk to us, then we would like to talk to you. So if you have any questions, then fill up the phones.
If you guys want to. I sent Mark a video.
I saw a picture of your Ant Farm yesterday. That was cool. Very cool.
We didn't have Laffy Taffy.
Did they make that out of an old Connect 4 game?
Hey, don't be hating on my.
It's not hating. That was a legit question. It was a legit question.
That is a highly sophisticated ant farm. It's not just some old Connect 4 game. But we didn't have Laffy Taffy. We did go with the Sour Patch straws. So So a little piece of that. If Ants loved it. My new pets, man.
Who doesn't love that? Everyone loves the Sour Patch right. Straws. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more of the Monsters of the Midday. Stay tuned. Even the series against the Golden State Warriors at a game apiece. You are listening to the Monsters of the Midday with Mark Rogers and Dusty Dvorak, and we have a phone line waiting for you right now. We don't take phone calls all the time. 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS, 460-9957. If you have any question, comment, concern, it is now the time for you to voice that. Dusty, the Cleveland Browns will be featured.
Hang on. Just wait a minute. Before we go there, just wait. I want to live vicariously through the young man who's running the board. Tell me about the pool. It's been a while since I've been young, and I've been single, and I've been out having a good afternoon at the pool. So how was the scenery, Missile?
Oh, it was really good scenery. You know, we have a solid group that usually goes down there, and I went down there, and we all drank some beers. And there was good scenery, Dusty. You would have liked it out there.
Were you, Missile, like, pool volleyballing it, or
nah,
what?
I just sat around, drank some beers, you know, talked a little bit.
Do you have your eye on a particular female or maybe a couple of females at the pool?
Oh, there's a couple out there, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone you want to give a shout-out to on the radio? We can hook you up here, man.
No shout-outs. I'm not going to give any shout-outs.
What about Heather?
Who's Heather?
Uh-oh. Who's Heather?
It's not Heather, Dusty. How about Morgan?
Hey, Morgan.
Sure.
Okay.
The apple of the Missile's eye. Well, hey, Missile, I just want to tell you I'm glad that you had a great day at the pool. Good for you, sir. You get off early, you go enjoy yourself, and then your Rockets dominate last night. So it had to be quite a quality Wednesday in the middle of May for you.
Yeah, it was a great day, man. Game was a lot of fun. The Rockets, obviously, they killed it. So, yeah, I had a good time.
Missile went to the pool and was boozing it up with hot chicks, and I was geeking out over an ant farm. My, oh, my, how lives can take interesting turns, Marcus.
It was.
I had ant farm action. My son had a workout class. My other son had soccer practice. Then I had to put all three kids down last night prior to watching the Western Conference Finals. So, sorry, Missile, if I have to hear about what life used to be like for me, because some days, like yesterday, I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, you should try it out. You guys are welcome to come up. I guess I'll send you the invite, man. You guys can come on up.
I'm too old. You can come hang out at my pool. I've invited you to my pool, but I guess there's too many old people that hang out at my pool. I don't even know if the Missile even gave me so much as a response, Mark, the last time I invited him over for a pool party. It's just
If you invite me, then I would be I'm more willing participant to come over to your pool. Dusty, we have some calls. Would you like to take them?
Well, we asked for them. It'd be rude of us not to.
You're right. Let's go to Coach T. Hello, Coach T.
What's up, fellas?
How are you doing, Coach T?
What's up, Coach?
Hey, I'm doing good. Is it football season yet?
It's always football season around here, man.
It's close enough.
From 11 to 2, it's always football season.
Well, hey, I mean, I don't know why. I just kind of wanted to talk about this last few weeks, but hadn't had a chance. But I want to talk about Mike Gundy for a second. And I want to go back to some of the criticism he's taken over time as far as his relationship with the media. And let me say what I say, and you guys can comment. But, you know, I think Mike's kind of crazy like a fox. He seems to pick and choose his times that he wants to do things in the public. But I think arguably right now, because of his timing in media and what he does and how he does it, he's one of the most well-known coaches in America. And I just had you guys comment on that because, you know, the things he's done has really made him known. And I think it's more important for him to be known nationally than it is to, say, give an interview locally.
Ooh, okay. You had me going, and I was agreeing with you until the nationally locally thing. listen, recruiting locally is where your bread is buttered. I mean, Mike Gundy isn't a national brand to the point where he needs to be bigger in Florida than he does in Oklahoma or Texas. So, look, hey, look, I don't care if Mike Gundy comes on this show or not. I don't get out of bed every day and concerned whether or not I'm going to hear from Mike Gundy. If he wants to come on, it'd be great because I know that there are a lot of people that want to consume that media. But locally, which to me is the recruiting area for Oklahoma State, should be Texas and Oklahoma. He shouldn't limit himself because he thinks he's better than that. That's absurd, and it will only hurt him.
Yeah, I can't judge. I don't know if that's the position. I think he you know, does. I mean, obviously, he does local stuff occasionally, but I don't know, not as much as the local people would like. So I'm not, you know, I would probably like him to do more. I just think he's very smart about his national attention.
Well, first of all, I got a couple thoughts on this. Number one, he's a heck of a football coach. Okay, so that's why he's relevant. Okay, he's the best coach in the history of Oklahoma State. He's had them consistently in the top 25 for quite some time now. So first and foremost, that's why he's relevant, and that's part of what gives him a national appeal anyway. When you're a top 20 program, and I believe he's been there, 14 years going into his 15th year, he's one of the most tenured coaches, not just in the Big 12, but probably when you look across college football. So I think you're selling him short when you just talk about kind of the gimmicks that give him national appeal. He gets national appeal because he's a heck of a football coach, and he wins games, and his team is nationally relevant year in, year out. I think when you go back to the situation – I'm a man, I'm 40. I think that put him on the map 10 years ago. And I think now with the hair and the dressing in a singlet and taking your shirt off at different things, I mean, I think that just kind of adds to the intrigue of Mike Gundy. But I think what makes him most relevant is that his teams win, and he's a good football coach. And I guess, you know, he can pick and choose and do whatever he wants. And Mark's right. Like, we don't need Mike Gundy on here to be on our radio show for us to have good ratings and for people to listen. I don't need that. But you know what? You know who he does a disservice to? The Oklahoma State fans. Because they want to hear from their head coach. They'd probably like to have hear their head coach on a nice 10-minute conversation to see how he's doing or whatever. I mean, to me, you kind of owe that to him. Like when Mike Stoops or Lincoln Riley or whoever it may be come on, the Oklahoma fans appreciate that. We like that for our radio show, no question. But when I get guests on, I'm not getting them on just for my show. I'm getting them on for my listeners. So I think that he sells his fan base short when he's only willing to go on and do national things because that's the national appeal when he really doesn't care much at all about back home. Does it hurt him? Is it a negative? I don't think it's that big of a negative, but I do think it's a disservice to the fan base because they want as much Mike Gundy as they can get, and I'm sure they'd love to hear him on a more local level, on local stations that they're listening to day in, day out.
Well, let's take our show out of it or anyone's show. I mean, like, for example, he didn't speak to the media from the bowl game until the spring, right? I mean, there was no introduction to the defensive coordinator. That's both local and national because, like Dusty said, he's done such a good job that he's going to make national, you know, he's going to make national news when there's sound bites and SportsCenter are going to play him, but he just chooses not to do it. So media is overrated in terms of winning and losing football games. You can hate the media, you can love the media. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Pat Jones loved the media, and he, you know, ended his career at Oklahoma State losing a bunch of games. It's irrelevant. So I don't tend to worry about it very much. I think the fans tend to worry about it a lot, and I think some people make too big a deal about it. But that's just me, Coach T. Thanks for the call, bud. I appreciate it.
Hey, brother. See you guys later. Thanks.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Coach.
Winning, bottom line, period. Win,
yep.
You can get away with a lot more.
And he,
it's a lot
and
more
let's
fun
face
for your coach
it.
To hunt rattlesnakes when you win. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If he's a losing coach and he's out there doing it, people are going to be pissed that he's not working hard enough.
Don't get it confused, okay? The mullet, the singlet, it's all fun to talk about, and it's good sound bites. Mike Gundy's nationally relevant because he's a hell of a football coach, Mark. He wins games. He's had, what, 10 straight? He's had four in his last five seasons, 10-win seasons. I mean, it's the golden age of Oklahoma State football. They are nationally relevant because they win, not because of how long his hair is.
Let's go to Jeremy. What's up, Jeremy?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
I just had a quick statement about the Mike Gundy issue. He comes on a local Stillwater radio station every Monday night during football season and speaks for, you know, an hour or better about what's going on and, you know, all about the Cowboys. So, I mean, he definitely gets out there to the local media in Stillwater.
Let me ask you a question. No disrespect to the local radio station. I worked at I worked at a small local station in Norman my first 3.5 years, so I have the utmost respect for those smaller stations. How many of the Oklahoma City, of the Oklahoma State fan base in Oklahoma City or in other parts of Oklahoma can hear that station? Can get a chance to hear their head coach? How, I mean, I'd love to see the numbers on how many people listen to that station as compared to some of the bigger stations. And I would say the reason that he does it is because he's probably got a really good relationship. I'm guessing it's Robert Allen's show. He's a sideline reporter for
I think it's a network responsibility. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so it's the coach's show. No, well, I'm talking about everyone has a coach's show. I'm talking about throughout the course of the year from time to time checking in. And, again, I don't even care about this show or about this station, and I don't really get on that much. I just – it's odd to me the discrepancy that you see the local media treated as compared to the national media. I'm just telling you right now, Bill Haston doesn't host a show. Bill Haston and a lot of the people that cover the Oklahoma State beat, man, they were really frustrated with Mike Gundy. Because to Mark's point, I mean, they didn't have a chance to speak with him about his new hires, his new staff, about anything post-bowl game all the way up until, the second or third week of spring ball, Mark? Something like that? I mean, it was like 90 days since they had heard from Mike Gundy talk about actual football topics. And, I mean, he doesn't have to do that. It's not going to help him win. But in my opinion, you kind of owe that to your fan base to get them some information, to get them excited about what you've got going on.
Speaking of rattlesnakes, mullets, and the such or the like, have you seen Mike Leach's Twitter feed, Dusty? Mike Leach is in Southeast Asia right now.
Well, what's he doing? Is Al with him?
I'm shocked that Al is not there with Mike Leach in Southeast Asia. No, Mike Leach is touring. He's over there doing several things, some of which are trying to sell Washington State beef to people in the other side of the globe. Just pull up his Twitter feed.
I will. The last thing I have on Mike
six
Gundy.
Hours
I think
of stories.
I think even the people that work with Mike Gundy wishes he would be a little more open and do local stuff. Again, it's not an end all be all. It shouldn't be something that people, you know, hate him or can't stand him or berate him for. But I don't know why anybody would defend that. It wouldn't be nice if Mike Gundy would do a little bit more local stuff. I mean, I don't know why people care.
If I'm the beat writer, I really would care. Me or you, I don't think I can speak for myself.
It doesn't bother me.
I don't care.
I would love to talk with Mike Gundy. I mean, listen, I've tried. I've tried every angle you possibly can. I've gone through his brother. I've gone through him directly. You name it. He's not going to do it, and that's fine. I don't hold a grudge with him, but I do think to a degree, we're here to offer information and be able to get people on for our fans, for the listeners, for fans of these different teams. And to me, that again, like I said, that's who I think it's sold short. But after listening to what sounds like a couple of Oklahoma State fans, it doesn't seem to bother them. So if the Oklahoma State fan base isn't upset about it, then really there's nobody that should be.
Tim McMahon has agreed to come on our show today, and that will happen in the 1 o'clock hour. We might continue to take some phone calls. Those are pretty good phone calls. Stay tuned to the Monsters in the Midday. We're back with Mark for this. Vegas is on a mission. I mean, the only thing that could derail that mission would be the fact that the Washington Capitals have never won the Stanley Cup with Ovechkin. I mean, that could be two, you know, immovable object, irresistible force type situation coming up in the finals. But Vegas, that's just an incredible story.
As much as I respect Alexander Ovechkin, I'm all in on the Knights, baby. Let's go Golden Knights. That would be an incredible story. Hey, one thing before we get back to the phones, Mark, we haven't mentioned this, and I do think it's definitely worth a mention. But Mike Slive passed away yesterday at 77 years old, a longtime SEC commissioner. He was there for 13 years. Under his 13 years, I believe I saw 81 total national championships won, kind of the golden age of college football, where they won 7 straight national titles in football, 8 overall. Under his watch. I don't know how much you can directly give him credit for that, but he definitely helped the SEC be able to make money, expand their brand, and really did a lot for that league as well as all of college football. So rest in peace, former SEC Commissioner Mike Slive. Did you ever have any run-ins with him, Marcus?
No run-ins at all. One of my best friends in the world, Jim Wheeler, who worked with ISL and tried to bring a college football playoff into existence in the early 2000s, dealt with him a lot. And he was a guy that was They wanted to control things in the playoff, but he was a guy that was pro-playoff. So he was a little bit more forward-thinking than some of the rest of the people out there like Jim Delaney in the Big Ten. Look, there's a lot of passion for that sport. There's a lot of passion for sports in general in the SEC country. There's not a ton of professional sports in some of those cities. And so the SEC is their pro sports, which I love the passion of it.
Listen to this. This just shows you how much money has been brought into collegiate athletics here in the last 15 years. When the year Mike Slive was hired, the SEC distributed $95.7 million. Okay? Now, there was 12 member schools in, but his final year, they distributed $455.8 million to their 14 schools. So he was able to help grow compensations for these conferences, for their conference, for coaches, for everybody in the game tremendously. So that, I would say, as much as anything, that's got to be one of the real lasting impressions he's going to have on college football was just the heights that he took it and the amount of money he was able to generate and bring into not just the SEC but also just college football in general.
I know this probably doesn't excite you, but I think people around here would be pretty fired up to know that the Cleveland Browns are going to be on Hard Knocks.
Give me the music missile. I got to get in the I got to get in the mode. I think it's going to be great. I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's a slam dunk.
There are a lot of different storylines to watch with the Cleveland Browns.
There it is. And who doesn't like Hard Knocks? I mean, it's a really good show. And I guess on one hand, I could hear people say, well, this team's 1-31 their last 2 years. Why do I don't watch that crap? First of all, doesn't matter who you're looking at. When you get a behind-the-scenes look at what goes on at training camp, it's incredible. And storylines. You got a quarterback controversy. You got one of the most polarizing quarterbacks who's going to be great, and I mean great on the camera. People are going to think he's like hammed up for the camera. That's just going to be Baker Mayfield, I'll tell you now. But, Mark, you had the number one overall pick last year in Myles Garrett that people don't know a whole lot about. Camera's going to be on him. You also had Jabril Peppers, a first-round pick out of Michigan, a big-time safety. It was a rookie last year. Don't know about him. Denzel Ward, a big-time cornerback. I think Nick Chubb and how he fits into that backfield. I think the Josh Gordon story. You know, we forget about Josh Gordon. You know, they signed Landry in the offseason, but they get Josh Gordon back, and if he can straighten up and fly right and quit smoking the weed, the dude is unbelievably talented. So when you look around, I mean, the Cleveland Browns, and obviously trying to come off the doormat of the National Football League, their storylines are very plentiful for this Hard Knocks.
I think that there is some Browns love out there that's spiraling out of control. There are people talking about the Browns, 7, 8, 9 wins, you know, competing for a wild card spot. I think the Browns are going to be better. It's hard for them not to be better. I think they finally have a GM that's capable. And they got a lot of young players and had a lot of picks in the last couple of seasons. And their quarterback that they have right now, even if Baker Mayfield wasn't on the team, is the best quarterback they've had in quite a while. I mean, if you look at some of Tyrod Taylor's numbers, Dusty, he's a good quarterback in the NFL. He won a playoff game this year. I mean, he's no slouch. So I think I don't know that Cleveland's going to be a wild card team, but I think Cleveland is going to be better, way better than they've been in the past.
I agree 1,000,000% with you on that. They've had so many picks these last two drafts. I mean, at some point, the more you infuse good talent, and it seems like they've picked quality players, they're just going to be naturally better. That quarterback controversy, or quarterback battle, is going to be very interesting. You would think that you're just going to ease Baker Mayfield along, but you know, with his personality, his mindset, he's going to be pedal to the metal competing every single play. So to get a behind-the-scenes look at that in particular, I think will be highly, highly entertaining. Missile, I know we're up against it, but real quick, can we sneak in the call before we hit this break? True Sooner? True Sooner, you're on. Oh, he's gone? Okay. Well, sorry, True. He already took off and left us.
I did not know that. I apologize.
Hey, before the day is done, Marcus, I do want to get into a little bit of this Nick Saban, Scott Frost back and forth.
Okay.
I think it's some pretty good entertaining stuff from from two high-profile coaches.
I got thoughts on that too, so I'll save them until the proper time.
Table them until later. When we get back next hour, we are locked and loaded for you. Tim McMahon, ESPN.com. He was in Houston last night. He'll give us a first account of what happened and what we should expect as this series shifts to Golden State. Also, Jake Trotter, who will be spewing all kinds of Longhorn love at 125. And then just Mark and myself to close things up. So we're action-packed next hour. Do not go anywhere. Keep it on the Monsters of the Midday on 98.1 WWLS, the sports animal. Place that I will be heading after work, one of my favorite places on this planet, Belmar Golf Club. There is no doubt where I will be. And, Mark, the flags aren't even really blowing today. I don't know if you noticed that. I mean, barely any wind out there.
I'm excited, so.
I will be. I will be taking my talents to Belmar as soon as this quality hour of radio it ends. And we will take you to Houston as a welcome to the show. The man, the myth, the legend, Tim McMahon of ESPN. Timmy, how about them Rockets last night, man? Wow. Oh, boy.
Where'd Tim go?
Missed you.
Gone?
Did you cut him?
Are you with me?
There is Tim.
You got me. All right. I'm in the Hobby Airport. I'm going to try to find a little place. I guess I got like a little 5-foot square radius here where you guys can hear me.
Just walk in circles. I've done it many a time.
There you go.
How about the Rockets last night, man? That was highly, highly impressive. And, I mean, as much as you want to talk about superstars, it was Ariza, it was Tucker, and it was Gordon that really – made the Golden State Warriors pay.
Yeah, and as much as you want to talk about offense, the Rockets are saying no. It's about their performance on the defensive end. They were disappointed. They felt like they didn't play hard enough, smart enough, well enough on that end of the floor in game one. And you know, if they can't stop the Warriors, you know, they've got to play that grinded out offensive style. Obviously, they think that they can get buckets with Harden and CP3, but they would much prefer to be able to get stops, get out in transition. They forced 15 turnovers last night. That certainly helped. And, you know, a lot of those shots, guys like Eric Gordon and Ariza are hitting and P.J. Tucker, they're not necessarily on fast breaks, but they are early shot clock, kind of push the pace, you know, and don't let the Warriors, you know, get down there and get their defense set. And, you know, that's the way that the Rockets want to play in the series. They weren't able to do it in game one. That was their priority going into game two, and obviously they were able to pull it off.
I think the saddest thing for me with the Rockets winning this, knowing it won't be a sweep, is that you're probably going to be kept away from Arlington for Bartolo Colon's birthday celebration next week, a week from today.
I can't say I've put a whole lot of thought into that, but I do appreciate there being an athlete in the Metroplex again who is older than me and in significantly worse shape.
And still getting it done. Maybe
exactly.
An all-star. I think that the Rockets, the difference for me on offense is that you're going to have to live and die with team basketball. And I like the fact that I don't expect 15 out of 18 for Tucker and Ariza again in this series. But I think that's you got a better chance when you're spreading the wealth a little bit if you're James Harden, where those guys get opportunities because of the buy-in factor on the defensive end of the floor. So I think you got to live and die with those guys getting some shots.
Well, look, I mean, that's obviously the design. You know, that's the hope. And great as Harden was as a scorer in game one, the Warriors didn't really let him get into a groove as a distributor. He had 7 assists, but they're all for dunks or layups, which, you know, those are great. But this is a guy who averaged over 3 assists per game that were 3-pointers during the regular season. He had none in game one. Take that. I mean, that's a 10-point difference right there. You know, look, it's funny. Mike D'Antoni's suddenly become like the big defender of ISO basketball, which I'm sure Carmelo Anthony finds hilarious, since that's what they butted heads about in New York, you know, Kobe Bryant in L.A. But D'Antoni, his deal is he's not anti-ISO. He's anti-inefficiency. Melo and Kobe at that point in his career, they weren't efficient ISO players. James Harden's the most efficient ISO player in the NBA. Chris Paul's pretty high up on that list. That is their best way to play
half-court basketball. But again, this is it's a deal where they don't necessarily want to have to play just half-court basketball. They want to get stops. They want to push it. They want to get stuff early in the shot clock and not have to have Harden and CP3 grind out every single possession.
If there's a Mount Rushmore of isolation basketball, Carmelo Anthony will have four heads on that mountain. I mean,
well,
Mike D'Antoni should not suffer for that.
Well, the faces will be missing their nose because he cuts it off despite his face.
Oh, ba-dum-ts. He'll be here all night, ladies and gentlemen. He's Tim McMahon of ESPN. Does a great job covering the NBA, currently on the Rockets-Warriors series. Is Chris Paul okay? He got Rockets fans a little nervous last night.
Yeah, no, he's fine. I mean, you know, a little. I'm sure there's a little something here or there. I mean, he's 33 years old, and you know, it's the playoffs. It's been a long season, but there's not an injury. He's not. You know, he had a little heat pack on his leg. He came out because he picked up his fifth foul. He didn't go back in because it got to be garbage time. Pretty quickly thereafter, he's walking around fine after the game. You know, I hit up a Rocket source today and was like, is there anything to be concerned about? And, you know, 10 seconds later, no, he's fine. So there's nothing there to worry about.
Do you think Steph's going to get hot in this series, or are the Rockets taking too much out of him on the other end of the floor?
You know, I think that actually is a big part of it. I do think this long break between games certainly could benefit Steph Curry and James Harden as well. You know, I think Harden's legs probably were a little heavy last night, which was that directly related to him going 3 of 15 from 3-point range. But yeah, to see Steph have two straight poor shooting games like that, where he's only knocked down 1 3 in each of the first two games, I think that they definitely are taking a lot out of him on the defensive end. I mean, they're attacking him. They're making sure they get him in ISO situations and making sure he has to work really hard on that end. And that's there's two reasons for that. Number one, he's the weakest link of a really good defensive team. He's the guy they want to go after because they think they can get buckets against the easiest. And number two, they want to make him work there. They want to really kind of test his legs, his endurance coming off of that knee injury. And even if the knee's fine, like he says, and there's no soreness, there's no pain, that's not necessarily limiting him. This guy has not played a whole lot of basketball in the last 2.5 months. It's hard to be in game shape when you're not playing basketball games. And so I think that probably has had some impact on his ability to be the world's best shooter, which obviously he has not looked like in these first two games.
Just kind of to further your point, I've been talking today. I love what the Rockets are doing. They did it in game 1-2. The Warriors have a weakness, and they're going to exploit it. I mean, they just keep going at him. Will that continue as this shifts to the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, absolutely. And look, you can try to hide him. You can try to put him on a quote-unquote non-scorer, and I'm talking like an Ariza, a P.J. Tucker, even though those guys scored last night. All the Rockets are going to do in half-court situations is have those guys come up and screen for one of their Hall of Fame playmakers, whether it's Harden or CP3. And the point of the screen is just to force the switch, spread it out, boom, you're attacking Steph Curry. I mean, they did that when they saw the Warriors during the regular season, and certainly they did it in these first two games. And, I don't see any reason why that would not continue. It's absolutely a priority for the Rockets.
Is cool throughout this entire series. I thought in game one he was going to lose his mind like 3 minutes into the game. Can he hold it together?
Will Draymond get teed up again? I would be willing to bet yes. Will Draymond do something extraordinarily stupid to get himself tossed or suspended? I don't know about that. But look, last night, I mean, I was surprised he wasn't given a flagrant at the end there, and it was time for him to go. It was time for him to go sit down, so he didn't do something stupid. But that was a pretty blatant push. I think that was a bigger hit than Dusty ever had during his NFL career when he got a reason. What? Oh, I'm sorry. That was a cheap shot.
When you're not covering basketball, what are you down there doing, stand-up? What's going on with you? I mean, you're just on fire today. Jeez.
Just want to get a little
Be sure to tip your waitresses, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to tip your waitresses.
But no, Draymond was without question frustrated there. He got a little cheap shot in on Ariza. I was surprised they didn't give him a play. I mean, a two-hand shove just out in the open floor. Come on now.
So we'll see. I mean, and folks in Oklahoma City know, you know, every once in a while he might accidentally kick a guy in the nuts or something like that. And, you know, you can never rule out Draymond boiling over. But all in all, he has been much better at controlling his emotions throughout the course of this season in the playoffs.
It seemed like last night the early turnovers gave the Rockets, the crowd, everybody a bunch of energy, and they fed off of that. I mean, how key will that be throughout the rest of this series that they do force turnovers and they do get out and run and get that energy and get that buzz going?
Yeah, I think that's critical. And look, the one flaw that I think you couldn't say the Warriors have offensively is that they can tend to get sloppy with the ball. And that's something you've got to take advantage of. That's something you have to exploit. And the Rockets didn't do it in Game 1. You know, the Warriors only had 9 turnovers in Game 1. And so, you know, it is an energy thing. It is a get-out in transition thing. And, you know, really, it just kind of reinforced what the Rockets have been talking about for 2 days. Everybody else is talking about, oh, ISO this, ISO that, da da da. The Rockets were talking about, we can't play poorly defensively. We have to play with a much more energy and play a much smarter game defensively. And you didn't see, you know, they were locked in. I think you get those early turnovers, that helps you get locked in. It kind of reinforces everything. But you also get just the terrible bust defensively, where in Game 1, you know, Klay Thompson's got time to take a dribble, spin the ball, you know, check to see if there's any wind in the arena before he knocks down threes. You didn't see those.
Hey, I know you're watching from afar the Eastern Conference like we are. The Cavs look to me like they're almost ready to phone it in. Now, it could change if they get some momentum going and hit some shots in Game 3, but there's a lot of standing around going on out there with those guys.
Yeah, and you know, the Celtics, obviously, they've got some young guys who have been great and are really kind of growing right in front of our eyes, and, you know, feeling very confident. And you know, Brian Windhorst, my colleague at ESPN, wrote about, as he put it, the organizational fatigue of the Cavaliers. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, LeBron is obviously one of the all-time greats, but there's also always a soap opera swirling around him. And, you know, they've played a lot of games. There's been a lot of just drama this season. I think that might be weighing on the Cavs. But at the same time, I think this thing's going to be 2-2 going back to Boston. A couple factors there. Number one, like, look, LeBron's come back from 3-1 down in the finals. 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals. He ain't wilting with that. And number two, look at Boston's record on the road during these playoffs. You know, they jumped out to a 2-0 lead over the Bucks. That series ends up going 7. I believe they've only got a road playoff win this postseason. So as good as they've been at home so far in this series, I think it'll be a different story in Cleveland.
I totally agree with you. Here's my one thing that concerns me, because I'm with you. Like, LeBron, I mean, he tried to will him to. He had a 42-point triple-double the other night, Tim, yeah. And it wasn't enough. They do have to have some other guys step up. And when George Hill plays as poorly as he is, if J.R. Smith can't figure it out when he gets back home, they might be in trouble. And I hate to say that, because I've had back the Cavs and LeBron for quite some time now, but I mean, I did think the other night showed that LeBron can't do it all by himself against this Celtics team.
Yeah, no, the starting backcourt can't be complete no-shows. And you know, at this point, I mean, before the trade deadline, they go out and get Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood to kind of, you know, give them more scoring punch. Those guys are absolute non-factors. I mean, the weight that LeBron has to carry is completely ridiculous. But basically, he needs at least 2 or 3 guys to show up and contribute. And, you know, I mean, just role players on, you know, just kind of as a rule tend to play better at home. So I think that happens in Cleveland. I still think that's going to end up being a good series. But obviously we're going to find out Saturday night. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
The stock for all those guys that came over in those deals has dropped dramatically. I mean, what's Rodney Hood's contract going to look like next year?
I'm more than willing to bet that it's a 1-year deal for not a whole lot. I mean, he's going to have to kind of take a prove-it contract. And it's funny, you know, that's a guy who the Jazz going into the season, obviously having lost Gordon Hayward and not realizing how good Donovan Mitchell was going to be, they went into the season thinking Rodney Hood was going to be their number one scorer, their primary scoring option. Donovan Mitchell emerges and takes off, and, you know, Rodney Hood kind of had to take a complimentary role, and he pouted his way out of Utah. Well, you know, the grass ain't always greener. The grass ain't always greener, as one of his former Jazz teammates pointed out after – Rodney Hood got a DNP CD last series in which he refused to go in during garbage time.
Well, he might want
to
continue
to go in free agency.
Well, Tyronn Lue might want to refuse to allow him to play because when he's been out there, it's been bad.
I mean, it hadn't been pretty.
He is not playing good basketball. What's the go-to spot in San Francisco?
You know what? That's one of those cities where you really can't miss. There's a ton of great spots. I don't necessarily have a go-to, though.
Okay. Well, where do you stay? They put you up at some luxurious place up there?
Nah, it's hit and miss. You know, a lot of times you got to stay in Oakland because those San Francisco hotel prices tend to be through the roof. But I got, I think it's called the Adagio, one of those little autograph collection Marriott properties. I got in there, you know, surfing last night, found me a spot in San Francisco. I've got a high school buddy who lives out there, works in the tech world, and makes ridiculous money. So they treat me almost as well there as you do in OKC. I said almost as well. So, yeah, looking forward to that trip. Heading home for a couple of days, though, Dusty.
You're not trying
to get Father of the Week, at least, if not Father of the Year.
That's right. You get to see your two beautiful girls for what? This will be, what, 2 days out of the last 30? The ESPN's working you to death, man.
I've been able to make numerous pit stops. It hadn't been as bad as I thought. You know, shout out to the Rockets for handling their business in five games in both the first two rounds.
Hey, in all seriousness.
Dusty, that will vault you to Father of the Year status. Dusty has an ant farm. It's been a life changer for him.
You should have listened to the show yesterday. I gave a pretty detailed vision for people of what the Dvorak ant farm currently looks like. It's a game changer. Did you ever have one as a kid? Did you ever have one?
Never had an ant farm.
Me neither, but I always wanted one. So now my son got one for his birthday, and it's taken over the family.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Anything to distract them.
Anything to distract them. That's absolutely right. Hey, man, safe travels.
Dusty's father of the year until that thing breaks and then it carries
off
the family.
He wants to get off the line. He wants to go, Mark.
See you, Tim.
Let Tim go.
Sorry,
safe travels, buddy.
I apologize.
Appreciate it, fellas. Take care.
Peace out, buddy. Tim McMahon doing a great job covering the Rockets and the Warriors. Why are you taking shots at me, Mark?
Because Tim was. It just felt like the right thing to do. You know how it is. It's a gang mentality.
You know what? I'm good with it.
I was easily swayed. I just hopped on the bandwagon.
Missile.
I hope those Eagles don't carry Joey Merson away.
Did you hear? You weren't on yesterday.
If they do, I'll buy one.
Were you laying out at the pool listening to me talk about the fine ants that reside at my home?
I think that happened before I got out to the pool because I missed it.
Well, you know, you can go back and listen to that on our podcast page. Missile, what's our podcast page, Sports Animal?
Podomatic.com? TheSportsAnimal.com/ go to there's a link that says podcast, then it's the Monsters of the Midday.
There you go. If you want to hear more about ants, there's plenty to hear on our podcast page. When we get back, he might as well wear burnt orange. He resides in Oklahoma City, but his heart's in Austin. Jake Trotter, ESPN, next. Welcome back. It is the Monsters of the Midday on a gorgeous Thursday afternoon. Time to talk to the Iron Man of the Sports Animal, man who loves Texas football like no other, from ESPN, Mr. Jake Trotter. How you doing, Jake?
Doing very well. I left a very important meeting, just walked up and left to talk to you guys. So,
are you in Bristol?
I'm in Bristol still.
Man, you've been there for
like multiple days.
Yeah, you sound awful. Is everything okay?
Yeah, sound good. Just trying not to disrupt meetings along the hall here. I'm just walking the hall in Building 13 right now.
What kind of meetings are you guys like? Are you guys like panning out like who's going to be covering what for next year? What's going on there?
There's a little bit of that going on. Kind of what are we doing? What are we going to do? I'm catching a flight this afternoon, Dusty. So hopefully I have the playing with the TVs like we had last time. Remember that?
You're not going to be covering Oberlin and Washington and Lee next year, are you?
No, but, you know, ESPN Plus, they're expanding the coverage map every year. I'm hoping at some point the Division III playoffs in college football make it to the equation.
Hey, I thought big news came out yesterday. We talked about it briefly. I basically wanted to throw a party because I just love good non-conference college football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay if
you're talking about
Texas Tech,
Oregon State.
I'm okay if it's at a neutral site, But I much prefer the home-and-home and Bama, Texas yesterday for 2022-2023. I love it. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it, Jake.
Well, since you brought up Texas, I will talk about them. Their non-conference schedule the next decade is incredible. I mean, they play USC this year. They come back and play LSU, then Alabama now, and they move back their series with Ohio State. So I think Michigan is in there as well. So their next decade is LSU, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and the one game against USC. They have to have the toughest non-conference slate of anybody in the country moving forward. And somebody had a great stat yesterday that the University of Texas will play more games with Alabama between now and 2024 than Alabama and Georgia will, which, you know, everybody talks about how strong and great the SEC is. The truth of the matter is, a lot of times you don't have to play the best teams in the SEC if you're in the SEC in the right year. So you got to give Texas a lot of credit, and now we'll see if they can do anything with it.
I think that's definitely the big question. Any Kyler Murray had a big weekend. You heard any more on him?
No. Keith Law's new mock draft just went up today. Kyler is not on it, but Keith always had Kyler as a compensatory pick going into. I mean, I think the more and more I hear, the more it feels like OU thinks he's going to be back. But, again, we just kind of have to wait and see what happens in the draft and, you know, whether some team, you know, makes a move higher than we expect that complicates this situation. But, I mean, I think if I had to bet today, Kyler Murray is going to be the starting quarterback at OU in 2018. What I don't know is how high he's going to get drafted and how that might affect everything.
Hey, you know, we see Oklahoma, since Joe Castiglione's been here, they have not been afraid to schedule tough in the non-conference. I'm wondering, at what point is it going to be almost essential that's going to be part of a huge part of your resume if you want to play for a national championship? And I mean, it already is, really. I mean, I can answer my own question because it basically helped Oklahoma and Ohio State the last 2 years get in. So you can see it right there. But I'm just wondering for Oklahoma State, now they've played a Florida State, they've played a Georgia, but year in, year out, they're not playing a quality non-conference opponent. Do you think that the more we see this trending in that direction in college football, we'll see more teams in the Big 12 and right here in our backyard in Oklahoma State kind of fall
asleep? Yeah, I mean, I think when you don't have that game, you almost have no margin for error. Even at one loss, it's going to be difficult to get in because we had a new precedent this year, two teams from the same conference. At some point, Notre Dame is going to be a factor in the playoff. And, you know, we saw that it doesn't matter if you win your conference or not. So if you're Oklahoma State and you win your conference and you have one loss but you have no marquee win, I think that the playoff committee has shown that they don't necessarily have to take you. And, you know, conversely with Oklahoma this year, you know, beating Ohio State, they were basically going to be in if they could win the Big 12. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a prerequisite. And if you don't play those games, then you're going to need, like, you know, if you're Oklahoma State and you're playing Boise, and you want to get to the playoffs, you're going to need Oklahoma and Texas to be like top 10 teams, and you're going to need to beat both of them. Otherwise, it's just your strength of schedule is not going to match up. The committee has sent a message that they care about who you beat in the non-conference. That's why Baylor and Baylor in particular in 2013 didn't get in. They didn't have any great wins in the non-conference. They had the one loss at West Virginia. They had a great win over TCU, but it wasn't enough. So you can go schedule Boise State and not play a Power 5 team. And Boise's a good team. I don't think it'd be like a bad win by any means. But, you know, if you have a top 10 win and you win your conference, you're going to be in the playoff. And if you don't have that top 10 win, you almost have no margin for error, I think. I think that's the way it's going to work.
Yeah. The stigma of the Big 12 kind of been taken by the Pac-12.
Yes.
You know, the Big 12, yeah, I don't think the Big 12 is considered.
Did you see Dennis Dodd's article? Did you guys see that article Dennis Dodd put out?
Wow. No, and it's on and off the field, and maybe more so off the field. I mean, the Pac-12's been terrible on the field, but, I mean,
TV network's even worse.
Their financials are really troubling. I mean, the trend is not looking good for them. They don't have, you know, while they have the population base, they don't have the interest level, and that is the real killer for them right now because it affects all kinds of things, including attendance, where players want to go, and then obviously TV dollars, because know, they can't get their dadgum Pac-12 network on the air on DirecTV, and so nobody can see it, and they're taking these huge losses because of the investment they made in the infrastructure with the Pac-12 network. So the Pac-12 is a little bit insulated from being poached the way the Big 12 has been, but I think at the same time, if you look at the just the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and take proximity out of the equation, the Big 12 is in a much stronger position, even though they lost teams to the Pac-12 and even though they're smaller.
I totally agree with that. Jake, I know you got to get back to your meetings. Listen, if you're going to pitch something, then just go big or go home. How about a Trotter Amin Dvorak crew? You could be the sideline reporter. I'm not
saying,
I'm just saying, throw it out there. Throw it out there.
Well, I know if I was with you guys, I'd get to eat like a burger on the sideline, so I'd be all for that.
Well, we may, you know, Molly was really sweet young lady, so we allowed her to eat. But if you're down there, Jake, you better play your cards right. You'll be very hungry.
Yeah, I'll be a pro. I'll be a pro.
All right, man. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Thanks. I appreciate
Jake
it.
Trotter of ESPN. You know, a couple of things off that, Mark. Like that's one thing that's I've always been. One thing that I've disagreed wholeheartedly with Mike Gundy on, and for that matter, Pat Jones. I hate this narrative of we just need to get to six. We just need to get to six wins and get to a bowl. So let's make that as easy a path as possible. Like at some point, and I think Oklahoma State has arrived. Oklahoma State is a perennial top 25 team, right? Aren't we to that point where we expect them to be somewhere in the top 25? At least I do.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I think once you get to that point, you have to back it up and schedule accordingly. So that is one area, and I know Mike Gundy's been very out front. He doesn't want to do it. I know Mike Holder, it sounds like he'd be more apt to do it. So that was a bit of a struggle there. And now it seems like they're on, rock the boat like it was for a little while. But I really do believe, Mark, if Oklahoma State, like if they're really going to be that top 25, which I feel that they are, they need to schedule accordingly, especially if they have aspirations to make the CFP, the college football playoff. I'm not saying that they never do it, but I think more years than not, almost year 3 out of 4 years, used to be scheduling a quality non-conference opponent year in, year out, because exactly what Jake said, it gives you a bigger margin for error. If you don't have that in your back pocket, then it just, right, wrong, or indifferent, it's going to be tougher to make that argument when you sit down and compare resumes at season's end.
There's a lot of things they could do. You know, they did schedule a home-and-home with Georgia. I got to see both of those games. That was awesome. You know, and Pitt, Boise State, aren't bad.
They did the Florida State.
That ain't bad. Pitt, Boise State, not bad.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying?
But is that on par? Is that on par with Oklahoma State, though? I'd say no. Like, to me, you got to start to schedule and be able to go out there and schedule a team that might be right there on your level, you know, right there in that same conversation type deal.
I mean, Arkansas has scheduled TCU and Texas Tech. I think Arkansas would schedule Oklahoma State. That'd be a game
that
fans would love. It used to be a traditional rivalry. They played in Little Rock every year. So I think that's one that I would take a look at if I'm Oklahoma State. You know, Colorado would be another one that's not bad. That's a game that fans could drive to, and it would rekindle an old Big Eight game. And I think as long as you're trying, you know what I'm saying, as long as you don't have the just games against, you know, one double A school and then two other group of five schools, I think OSU is, you know, hopefully they can get to that point. Because, yeah, I think Boise State's a good home and home. I really do. And I think they did that strategically. I think that Boise State, without Chris Peterson, is a little bit different than with Chris Peterson, obviously. But people realize that that's a name in college football that gets your attention.
I'm 100% with you on that. I'm not all over the Boise State one, but I mean that's not a big time marquee non-conference game. I mean that kind of like that appeases the appetite, but that's not, you know what I mean? Like that's not necessarily really just going for it. I mean, and again, I think Pitt's okay. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Pitt. Pitt was obviously down this year, but Pat Narduzzi's a good coach. They've been a pretty good team. 14, they played Florida State. So I'm not saying they never do. I'm just saying that I think that we're – this is from my vantage point. It seems like more and more of the legitimate year-in, year-out top 25 programs are really making it a point to go out and schedule some of these tougher non-conference matchups. And I'm just saying that
I think the very top are doing that, and I think they realize, just like we've talked about, they realize that that's not going to be a death sentence for them if they win a conference championship. A one-loss SEC champion is going to be almost a lock to get in the college football playoff.
Playoffs? Well done. I like that. Hey, one thing too, Curtis was praising the Alabama-Texas 2022-2023 home and home as we were yesterday, but he was also completely ripping the neutral site games that are held at a lot of NFL stadiums we're seeing coming vogue. Like, I like the home and home. I think that that's, you know, allows the tradition of college football to shine through even more so, and it gives, you know, those fan bases that other place to go, and then you get to host it at your place. So I would prefer that every time. But I'm not going to complain about the neutral site games, though, Mark, because if that's the least I can get, I'll take that over nothing. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, it's still good quality college football, non-conference games.
If they played it at Jerry's World and Mercedes-Benz, you know, in Atlanta, that would have, I would have still been somewhat excited about it. I mean, very would have taken my excitement level down not as much as you would think. It's great in Tuscaloosa and Austin, but it would have been just as been fine with me if it was in Atlanta, Dallas.
The point is to get those teams on the field playing football against one another in the non-conference. It obviously is a luxury if you can get them both to agree to do a home and home. I don't think anybody argued that point, but I'm definitely. It was interesting to hear those guys because they were at least Curtis. He hates. I mean, he was saying he hates these college games being played at NFL stadiums, and I don't know. Like, I've really enjoyed, like, Virginia Tech, West Virginia last year to start the season. That was great. I mean, I really enjoyed that game on a Monday night. Florida State, Alabama. I mean, I thought that was a great game to kick the season off. Again, I get it. Like, there is a little bit more cachet. The traditions shine through more. The college football pageantry is more apparent on a college football campus. But at the same time, just give me the big-time marquee matchups in college football because the more the merrier, at least from where I sit. Speaking of college football, Nick Saban, Scott Frost, some interesting back and forth. We'll discuss next. Before we hand the baton over to the man, the myth, the legend, the ultimate, Jim Traber on the afternoon sports beat. He must have had a good show today, Mark, because the ultimate has not been bombarding us with text messages. Which typically, I feel like I've had a good show if the ultimate isn't mad at me. So, who knows? Maybe he's... I guess we did get a few. But that was about Craig. That wasn't about us. So, I mean, he hasn't been upset with anything we've had to say. Just potentially the hump man. Okay, I do want to mention this story. So, you know, we obviously know UCF claimed the national title. Scott Frost has come out and said, I understand why they did it, but I would not have done it. I wouldn't have claimed the national championship if I was still there. There's a system in place, blah, blah, blah. But he understands and recognizes why they did it. Well, I had this written down yesterday. We just never got to it. Nick Saban... Earlier this week, the article I read was from yesterday, he talked to USA Today, and he had some thoughts about UCF claiming the national championship. This is what he said, quote, it's a self-proclaimed is not the same as actually earning it. Nick Saban says, we've had only one undefeated team, and that is really hard to do. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for their team and what they were able to accomplish, and they can make every claim that they should have been in the playoff. I get that. But we have a system, and it's not fair to the people who went through the system and earned their way playing really, really good teams. I mean really good teams and really tough games. It's not quite fair to them for somebody else to decide to claim a national championship. While I would say I'm a much bigger fan of Scott Frost than Nick Saban, and I haven't even gotten to what Scott Frost said, just first – on the Nick Saban comments, Mark, I completely agree with Nick Saban said. Like, that's been my stance the whole time. I don't want to diminish what Central Florida did at all because it's amazing. I played a lot of football, and I've been on some great football teams. Never went undefeated. So I know how hard it is to go undefeated, and I have the utmost respect for that. But there's a system in place. There's a system in place to crown a national champion that everybody signed off on and everybody agrees to. So they're after the fact, since there is a system in place, for a team, a program, a university to then try to self-proclaim a national championship, it is a tough pill for me to stomach, Mark. I'm with Nick Saban in that regard.
Well, even the Scott Frost comments don't necessarily troll Nick Saban. They go at Alabama because there's a lot of schools that are claiming national championships in the 30s and the 40s, which not many people remember, and there was not necessarily an Associated Press poll at the time that people went off of. There were several other college football polls, but there ain't any college football poll that matters anymore. They got a championship game that they play, and Nick Saban's been winning a bunch of them, so I don't think that the Scott Frost that holds as much weight coming back at Nick Saban when now we're in an era where there's really not much of a dispute who the national champion is.
What I liked about Scott Frost's comments, okay, and this is what he had to say. So Saban says this, I believe, Tuesday. It's reported Wednesday. And again, like I told you, Scott Frost, this has got to be a difficult spot to be in if you're Scott Frost, because his former players are on that team. He doesn't want to disrespect them. He hates that they've claimed a national title, okay? But at the same time, he also hates the system, and he hates that UCF wasn't given the opportunity to play. So he's in an interesting spot, and this is what he told a local Nebraska television network. Quote, Alabama probably has one or two national championships they claim that weren't necessarily recognized by everybody. And he's right. Mark, he's absolutely right. That's why I have no problem with what he said. Because he's right. He never says anywhere in there that UCF should be a national champion. He's not in any way disputing what Nick Saban said. So what I love about this is they're kind of going back and forth to a degree, but I agree with the both of them. I agree with what Nick Saban said about UCF. I do think it's clownish. I completely disagree. But I also know, and I've looked in the past, that Alabama has some national championships that they should have never claimed, that make no sense they were able to claim. So while Scott Frost, I don't think he's questioning that Central Florida should have been crowned national champions, what he is doing is putting a spotlight on the almighty Crimson Tide and saying, now, wait a minute now. Those 12 national titles you claim, there's a couple of those that really aren't on the up and up. And he's 100% correct. So I thought it was a pretty nice troll job by Scott Frost, not to Nick Saban, but to the Alabama Crimson Tide prestigious program.
Do you want me to be negative about that?
I don't want you to do anything. I was just
negativity.
Sure, you can.
Scott Frost is at Nebraska now. No, I'm just saying Scott Frost is at Nebraska now. Time to leave Central Florida behind.
You're right.
I mean, I just think I don't have a problem with Scott Frost, but it's time to, like, if I'm a Nebraska fan, booster, administrator, I'm just like, what are you talking about Central Florida for?
Okay, so. And again,
Nebraska.
You know, context is everything, though, Mark. But he's not talking about Central Florida. He's talking about Alabama. And I think all he's just really – my guess is he was probably asked the question, no different than when he was on with us. We probably asked the question about Central Florida. And I'm sure he was asked, you know, what do you think about Nick Saban's comments about Central Florida being a self-proclaimed national champion? And my thought is Scott Frost probably says, well – if you look at Alabama's history, haven't they kind of self-proclaimed or had some national championships that aren't recognized by everybody? And I'm sure that's it. Not to overly defend them, but, I mean, you know, all we're getting is this one quote, and it makes it seem like, you know, Scott Frost, Nick Saban going back and forth. All I know is this. Nick Saban's writing what he said. Scott Frost is writing what he said. And I kind of like the fact that now it appears, at least on the surface level, the Alabama head coach and Nebraska head coach, they got a little bit of beef. At least they got a little back and forth going that makes for good sports talk radio. So thank you, gentlemen. It's been much, much appreciated. But I'll tell you, that won't be appreciated nearly as much as the fine greens and fairways I will be hitting and dominating you on at Belmar Golf Club, which is where I will be heading right now. Marcus, you better get over here as quickly as you can because I'm ready to roll, baby.
Get over where?
Huh? Get over to my house so we can head to the golf course.
Okay. Sounds good. The ultimate Jim Tramer coming up next. We'll see you people tomorrow. Stay tuned.